Hi there, and welcome to our podcast, Mindfulness at Work. I'm Cara Pollard.
And I'm Beth Miles.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, Cara.
I can't wait to continue our amazing conversation with Sarah Lacey.
Yes, it's been rich, hasn't it? And full of interesting topics.
Amazing, just amazing. So I think we're going to get started. We're going to talk about Sarah's views on gender roles in today's world.
All right. So Sarah, this is Cara Sarah. I'm so excited for all of us to be here.
I'm so excited. Beth, I have to tell you, Eli, my gender fluid / trans child, is like loving your dresses. Yeah. Up the other morning and put one of them on like a Saturday and made us all breakfast and made us freshly squeezed orange juice. I was like, You're like a 1950s housewife. This is amazing. I think he loves how like classic they are, and He's such a snob. I have a cat.
This is a beauty. Right. Well, Sarah, thank you. And it is lovely to hear. And I hope, obviously, you are like the perfect mother for that whole girls up front category and message. So I love that.
I've won like fearless feminist daughter at birth, and then one like very traditional princess. Us, who was boy at birth. So both
fascinating. I know, right? Right. The whole gamut.
When I did Girls Up Front, when Caitlin and I worked on something that was very much about girls, we took that situation and said, we're going to shore up our girls. Predator, Not Prey was about showing these girls you're fierce. You are equal in every way. My wonderful, thoughtful, beautiful, at the time, 15-year-old daughter, who, you know, was raised by me and her father, of course, but me as the feminist. And even in the prior line I had, it was all about girls and appropriateness, but from a different point of view, doing Girls Up Front and Predator Not Prey, she said, Mama, I think you need to do something for the boys. And I was like, ooh. And she's right. But I couldn't, you know, Caitlin and I chose one aspect of that. We couldn't take on the whole thing. But Certainly we thought about the whole picture. But I think leaving boys out of that conversation isn't right. And maybe as a woman, I look at it as, you know, there's a lot of attention on it for these boys. Let's cast a little light on the girls for a little while. But I think what makes me hopeful is like even understanding Cara's work in supporting and kind of raising everybody, right? Like the rising tides raise, what is, I always mix my metaphors, but every boat raises as the tide comes up. Somebody figure that out for me, but that we do lift everybody up. Yeah. And until we do that, until organizations understand you can't give a woman 6 weeks off to deliver a baby and come back when everything's been turned upside down. Mm-hmm. Nothing. I mean, I'd be the first to say it's actually okay to say I felt different after I had my daughter. I had different priorities. My body felt like hell. Could I go back into the workplace? What about all these things that were incredibly important that didn't fit in that corporate world anymore? And was I less? No, I actually thought I was more, but it wasn't necessarily easy to navigate that. So how do we make it clear about the meaningful changes that happen? And then what do we do to help people with it? Because are you just going to throw women out of the equation, right? Did we just lose that whole unbelievable investment we've made? Women have made into themselves. Corporations have made into women. Do we just dump them because, you know, we got to go lactate at noon and deal with stuff.
And there might be another pandemic. So just
right.
No, I mean, look, as much as I'm incredibly hard on men, there is like a role society plays here. And when I heard my kids were going to homeschool, I immediately in my mind saw that I would be teaching them every day. Mm-hmm. And it was really my partner who was like, they have a dad and you need to demand that he does half of this. Like, you can't do all of this. Mm-hmm. And it literally had not occurred to me to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, when I envisioned it, I envisioned me doing it. And even when he said that, I was sort of like starting to raise objection in my mind of like, well, I have a more flexible schedule. Well, you know, I was even talking myself out of it. And then I realized that he was exactly right. I called their dad and, you know, within he assumed he'd be doing half of it. Like, it was not a sales That's job. Right. I was just like, yeah. which days do you pick? And he was like, okay, I'll take these days. And I said, you know, okay, great. And so it was like, I was cheating myself more than anything else. And so part of the reason I wrote that post was to tell women, like, you need to demand this and not expect you take it on, especially if this is going to be something that goes on for months.
We have no idea when that's going to end, right? We have no idea.
And I mean, to me, that was one of the real gifts of divorce is that, you know, you don't have your kids half the time. That's not a gift. I hate not having my kids half the time, but rather, my kids are with their dad without me in the middle of the relationship for half the time. Mm-hmm. And it not only required that he step up as their dad and learn to do hair and learn to cook and learn to do all those things, but it gave him the space to step up because I don't think he had truly had the space. And so I do think that's an issue. And like, I mean, Cara, I would love to hear more about like the work that you do with dads because we've noticed in the work we do with corporates, like our first company to roll us out globally was Box. And about more than 20% of their global workforce is on Chairman Mom. It's been an extraordinarily popular benefit. And whenever we do events, it's like as many men in the room as women. And I think when we do, you know, sort of those lunchroom benefit sign up things, it's more men than women that sign up. I mean, there are men who want to be better dads and want that space and want to understand how. And you're right, Beth, we don't as a society and on an individual level in the home always make that space for them.
I have found a little bit of the opposite in a group setting. There have been some older dads who have come in and who have, like I said, have really revealed themselves and used the support and cried and really wanted that growth, which was, they just don't know. They need somebody to question the cultural beliefs so that then they can question it and see it from a different vantage point. But I did, funny enough, I was doing a presentation for lawyers. And I had submitted something to the Illinois Bar of Professionalism for it to count as a continuing legal education credit. And so the room when I started was filled with men and women, and they were all gathering their lunch. And because the men found out that they didn't know if it was going to count for a CLE credit, not one man stayed in the room. It was all women. And they remarked to me, like, see, this is what we're dealing with.
Wow.
You know, and I will say that it allowed for some real deep, deep learning to take place and deep revelations. And really, the women really told me so many things. And I think that they supported one another, which of course we find. But I think if I went back and got the carrot of the CLE credit, I think that they would, if we taught them how to use community, they would be willing. They don't know what they don't know, but like your husband, I love that what you said, what
ex.
A gift.
Don't remarry
me. Your ex. I'm sorry, your children.
I don't like him that much.
Yeah. It's not a reunion. He's just a great dad is what you said. Yeah. But I think it's so great that you know the beauty in the fact that he has that relationship. And not only is it, it just struck me that it's not only the jobs of doing hair, but it's that emotional piece that you're not there when somebody's crying or when someone is grieving a little mini loss that they may have sustained. And your husband has the space to have to serve them. And I think through that space is where men see things from other viewpoints and therefore become more empathetic and compassionate. And when we allow for that, I think that that's where a lot of change and deep change and, you know, growth takes place that, but for us always being there and rushing in, they don't have that. So what a beautiful way to look at that. And the other thing that struck me, Sarah, that I'd love to ask you is it seems like you just have an immense amount of bravery and courage and you constantly question things. And I wonder if it's ever scary or if you ever, you know, you let us see a little bit of a light that you kind of reverted back into thinking, well, I guess I'll have to do this all and take care of our kids while this pandemic is going on. So you let me see that light. I'm wondering if any of these things you've taken on have ever scared you or that you wanted to maybe stop.
Well, look, when you have to take armed guards to Yo Gabba Gabba Live with you because of the threats against your children, like, yes, you're scared. I mean, I definitely have a very high risk.
Which tolerance. That relates to the Uber coverage, right? Or yeah. The terrible time in yeah. your life.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible few weeks.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea that would be your answer. I didn't know that.
No, and it's I actually, the book that I wrote about motherhood, I actually open it with a scene in Nigeria where I was there as a journalist and I was, my ex-husband and I got kidnapping sounds too grand because we were held, it was all over in a day, but we basically got kidnapped by this vigilante gang and tried.
And it was, my gosh. You know,
at machete point, and it was terrifying. But like, I was sort of fine. Like, there was kind of a moment I was worried, and then I was sort of like, once we like got out of this like one place where it was scary, where we were kind of physically trapped, and once we sort of got in the courtroom, we're being tried, I was like, okay, this is just like a bribery situation. And I might like lose like a finger or something, but like, I'm going to be fine. This isn't any problem. And I was like, totally fine. but
we mentioned you're a badass, Sarah. I didn't know that story either. And
then at the end of I take you through the whole sort of pages of this. And then, and it's worse, like, because it's like at one point I'm like, you know, and when I get out of this, it's going to be like a great story. And like, I'm going to dine out on this as a journalist for like years, you know, because journalists always want to be kidnapped and like things like this. And so I was like, oh, there's an upside to this. And then, you know, at the end of this anecdote, like I look down and apologize to my 5-month pregnant belly. I was 5 months pregnant at the time.
Oh,
I mean, so like I have always had a very high personal risk tolerance, and I'm someone who probably doesn't get as scared as I should get in many situations. But the point at which like a multi-billion dollar corporation was threatening to try to just get at me to destroy my family. Like, first of all, yes, I was scared, but also that was like watch a nature documentary to know that's the stupidest thing you can do is like threaten a mother's kids. Like that's not her point of vulnerability. That's right. The point of strength. So, I mean, it wasn't really a smart move for them. But, you know, it is sometimes scary, but I also, I mean, it's just part of having been a journalist for 20 years. I think it's only certain people stay in a profession that's that abusive for that long. And I think it hardens you and makes you more the way you are, that your job is to deliver the truth no matter what. You kind of can't live with yourself if you don't. I think it attracts that kind of person naturally. And I think it makes that person more that way. I do think it's like so second nature to me, but it's funny, Beth, when you were talking about this sort of dichotomy of how like nurturing and sweet I am with my children, but how like brutal I am to everyone else. Like it reminded me of this story where my kids were, you know, because my kids are always very aware that there's mom and then there's like Sarah Lacey TM. And it's funny the times my kids will refer to me as Sarah Lacey and not mom. Because they know it's this separate thing.
Yeah.
And we were at like a baseball game in Memphis, Tennessee on 4th of July, which is where I'm from. And so I'm very much not in work mode, right? And it was like, 1,000 degrees, and we were in this endless line for ice cream, and it was just like brutal. And like, you know, something happened, and I chased someone down and gave them my ice cream because theirs spilled or something after I'd stood in this line for forever. And Eli was like, "Mom, you are just so kind. You are so nice.
Oh.
Like, everyone is so terrified of you."
That is the greatest.
He's so aware that people fear me, but he's like, I don't get it.
Right.
The greatest mom on the planet.
Right. You're giving ice cream at baseball games. Why would anyone ever be afraid of you? Oh my gosh. That is so great.
Well, and I think that that in itself, right, speaks to the breadth and the extension of a woman, right? Or like that you can be all that, you know, when you can be this loving, amazing mom and raise these children and then pursue your career and be and have such a level of mastery at it. And to me, the greatest the saddest part of that is that women do at times have to choose between that, right? Yeah. Like, why can't you be that loving baseball Tennessee mom on, you know, taking your kids back to your hometown and showing them that, and then coming back and earning an amazing living and pushing yourself and being this extraordinary person? And for lack of support, sadly, sometimes we have to step aside. And
I think it's societal pressure. I mean, I was incredibly lucky that I had a job where being liked was not part of my job. And in fact, bosses of mine early in my 20s would be like, oh, someone's happy with a story. You probably didn't do it right. I mean, being liked is a sign you're not doing your job well as a journalist. Mm, and I do think that's this likability trap that women fall in, because as much as that, it is a breath, it is also the same thing. I mean, to me, risking, I gain nothing to like expose someone doing something horribly. I'm gaining nothing out of that. Like, you're not paid by the view as a journalist. You're not. You can write something stupid and get way more page views than that. Like, it's, you know, there's nothing I have to gain from doing that. And there's so much I have to risk. I mean, you know, Pando, my investigative journalism company, which we sold last summer, you know, we had almost $500 million in threatened lawsuits because of stuff we wrote over the course of that company. Right. I mean, we have nothing to gain by doing that shit. It's an act of love. It is the same act of love that, you know, makes my kids behave. I mean, it is all an act of love in order to be that honest and in order to like stake out those fights when you feel they're really important. And it's like, as much as like from the outside, I think they seem really different, I think it's all really the same thing. And I think what keeps women from being able to do that is this likability trap that we fall into, and this tightrope of, you know, not being too feminine, but not being too masculine, and not, you know, and it's like just this, all of this shit we get conditioned into, you know, just get shrunk and shrunk and shrunk and shrunk and shrunk. And like, I remember, I mean, I hate to like, quote a Soul Cycle instructor as a spiritual guru, both because
he's not a
Soul Cycle now because of Trump. Thank you, Trump, for ruining everything.
Right.
But also, I'd be more of a cliche Californian at this point. But, you know, I remember at one point a Soul Cycle instructor basically saying, like, you know, you're always going to be too much of something for somebody. And it's like, if you keep adjusting that too much and whittling it down to please someone, you're going to be left with nothing. And like, that to me is like the most important message for young women. Cause I just see women come into the workforce in their 20s, you know, with this intense personality and drive and goals and like, you know, inner beauty and everything. And the workforce just whittles them and whittles them and whittles them. And it always seems like these small trade-offs that you make in order to be more professional, quote unquote, or be more likable, or be more what we would consider a leader, or whatever it is. And I think I was lucky that I was in a profession where it was part of my job to be hated and to be criticized and to be trashed constantly. Because like, I was never going to get ahead by being those things.
Right. You weren't going to whittle yourself.
Yeah, because you're not going to whittle yourself, because the overall reason is because it is a deep act of love. And I just love it. I love that. It's, you can't be liked and loved all at the same time, all the time. And if you're,
especially as a mother.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, what a great example. And if you try that, you're not going to be doing your job. So that is it. I just love that. It's so true. I don't want to lose myself through likability. I mean, that's a lesson for all our daughters.
So I think this, Sarah, like my connection to Kara, we met in sixth grade way back when in Lansing, Illinois. And then her and I have been in touch throughout the years, but it was actually my using Kara as a coach when I needed some scaffolding in my own life and had gone through a tremendous amount of loss and just was like, I just needed someone to pull me back in. And a lot of what I discovered with Kara was this idea of storytelling, right? Our personal storytelling, this generational storytelling. And I think Kara so beautifully helped me better understand my story, look back at my story, pull out that crappy generational ridiculousness that served me and not at all, and really see myself more authentically. You know, life had taken its toll in certain ways, and I needed to re-examine all of that. I think that's kind of that whittling that you're talking about, right? Or well, you're not even, you've either whittled or you've carried these this dumb extra baggage, and it's just not you, right? When you let, for me personally, when I re-examined that, Kara so beautifully helped me just see the stories that were real, the stories that didn't serve, and then how you do go forward. And I think, you know, I've had great success in my life anyways. I think if I had learned that earlier, I've often wondered, like, what more could I, like, I've just been carrying that crap. If you somehow have, to your point of like helping women to see, you don't need to do that whittling. And it's through owning your story, understanding your authentic story that you go forward with. Like, I don't care if anyone now doesn't think that this is my story and I'm sticking with it. Right. And then I'm just me. Right. And you don't have to worry about it as much. Yeah.
Well, and it's really, I mean, I'll tell you the thing that has reinforced what you just said more to me than anything I have lived or anything I've ever covered or done is having a gender fluid son. I mean, like Eli is, just, I mean, just such an amazing, amazing, amazing person. And it's been just the world's biggest gift because it's someone who like thinks I know all about like gender from the lens of like a woman. It's like, really, you don't know anything about gender until, you know, you're sort of on the front lines, like fighting for a gender nonconforming child, you know, every day of your life. And it's, you know, what's so amazing about Eli, and I'll like use male pronouns for the purposes of this conversation, because we're sort of between two worlds. There's times that he is very concerned about being a girl because of bullying and other things. And then there are times that Eli's a girl. And so it's like, he's not really a they, it's like he has two distinct things, and it's super easy, as you can imagine. But anyway, this is all you see, but like, but you know, he is so well aware. Like, it's like, okay, I'll put it this way in startup analogies. I remember, like I mentioned, I followed Facebook when it was very, very new. And I remember when Mark Zuckerberg was like, I don't know, under 20, when he first took money from Peter Thiel, who, you know, is now Satan, but at the time wasn't clearly. When he first took money from Peter Thiel, my business partner just walked by and was like, he was. When he first took money from Peter Thiel, Peter, you know, he had this surging company. He'd never had a job. He was really in over his head. And he was self-aware enough to know he was in over his head. And Peter said to him, like, you're not going to get everything. Or Peter said to him after he signed the term sheet, like, just don't fuck it up. And Mark was just like, oh, thanks. Great. And, you know, what he said to me at the time was, you know, I've been well aware that like, I'm not going to get everything right. And I fuck up things every day consistently. But really what he was telling me was, don't fuck the important things up. And really your job as a CEO of a rapidly growing company is to prioritize what are the things that you can't fuck up and not fuck those up, because you're going to fuck up so much stuff. And that's sort of how I think about parenting, because, you know, we all look, our children will be on a therapist's couch at some point talking about it. Like, that is inevitable. And these parents who are like, I'm just trying to keep that from happening, it's like, well, stop, because it is inevitable. It is inevitable. But the question is, what are they going to be talking about on that couch? And like, how many sessions will they have to go to?
Right.
And I feel like with my kids, you know, the only thing I need to get right with Eli, the only thing is protecting his mental health. Because like, I grew up with a gay brother in an evangelical home. Like, I've seen the lasting toll that took on him. I think a lot of people in Gen X, like, we all know the friends who grew up like having to, you know, stuff down and ignore who they were. And there's depression and there's addiction issues. And there's, I mean, it's just, it is a tragedy and those people were never able to live through their full potential. I just finished reading Jonathan Van Ness's memoir and he talks about this, you know, beautifully, and he is an incredibly successful man on a queer show. And even he, you know, this toll this took on him. And so the only thing that matters for my child, and the only thing that matters more than the feelings of his grandparents or the feelings of anyone else, is protecting his mental health. And so I've been incredibly clear with Eli since day one that this is not like some, not only is this not something he needs to hide and that's something, you know, he needs to feel shame for, but this is not like a disability, like which is how some people talk about these things. This is his God-given gift that makes him so phenomenal and beautiful. This is his greatness, his ability to have, as of now, all of the privilege of being a tall, good-looking white man, and yet this deep understanding of otherness, of being also a trans woman, that is his superpower. I mean, he walks through the world with such beauty and color and light and life. And I mean, he is so expressive. He looks at things in different ways. He creates new words. He creates new ways of talking. I mean, he just like, he is this sort of otherworldly creature because he lives in this space where he's celebrated for blending those two things together. And look, he's had bullying issues. He's had things, you know, it has not all been a walk in the park, but he has always known since he was 18 months old and put on his first red high heels that is absolutely not just tolerated by anyone who is allowed to breathe the same airspace as him, but it is celebrated. And, you know, I can see having grown up 2 years younger than my gay brother, who grew up in a house where that wasn't, and raising a son/daughter who's now 9, where it has been, it is a night and day situation when a child does not ever have to whittle themselves down and ever have to whittle down who they are. I mean, I can't even like put into words how remarkable it is. And it is just so who he is. And when you take off those constraints, it's amazing. Like we were watching one of the Star Wars movies last night, which for a long time Eli didn't want to watch because he's just like not into Star Wars. He like sees this like sort of straight bro-y thing. And I'm like, and his dad's like, there's princesses in it. And his dad's like, tell him on it. And then, but like, Eli's really obsessed with Disneyland and like really obsessed with Bob Iger and like researches the moves made at Disneyland. He can tell you what rides were extinct, what animatronics were recycled. Like at one point we're in the Little Mermaid ride and he's like, see those stairs? Emergency exit. Like he knows every fact about Disneyland because he's obsessed. He's a Virgo too. And he's obsessed with the world being beautiful and perfect. And so Disneyland, he can relax because it's done for him. So anyway, what convinced him to watch Star Wars was that Bob Iger has devoted so much real estate and Disney parks to it. And so he's like, maybe there is something. Star Wars. But anyway, we were watching something last night and someone mentioned something about Anakin Skywalker. And anyway, he goes, oh, I think that's so-and-so. And he's going to be wind up being the villain, AKA da, 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 da. It's like living like a mini Queer Eye. Like you grow up and do something so amazing, everyone is going to be like, I can see the press conference. They're going to be like, what was it like as a child? And I'd be like, this, exactly this. Like my fashion choices were criticized. Like, I mean, you know, everything. He's exactly this now. And it's like, that is the beauty and fun and joy and amazingness of being Eli and like being near Eli. And like, I shudder to think if Eli had been born to someone who did not see that, like what the world would be missing out on now. And it's like, so like we think as, I know it's a very, very long rant, but like, you know, we think that as women, we get whittled away. I mean, what if you don't fit in either bucket?
Yeah. Right. Right. And even as men, what Beth said, even if you are a really masculine type boy that likes Star Wars and all of those things, they're told to give away half of who they are, which is emotional or excitable or even tears or whatever it is that, you know, they can't express themselves. And that's whittling away who they are. So I think that's another aspect of your bravery, though, Sarah, is that you were able to know what he needed and sought out to be you and your ex to be those type of parents who wanted him to be all that he could be. So
it's not a disability, or you're not crossing over to something. You're being true to your sense of self. And I think it's these ideas too about how asking people who are gay or women or lesbians to come out. Well, why do they have to come out? I don't have to come out as a heterosexual woman. You know, I think that also implies that there's something that's off that they need to address, that they need to make this huge community statement about. Yeah, right. I'm like, you don't really owe me. I don't need to tell you, you know, I really love to be with men, but I don't need to tell you that. But that is the expectation, that that is what is demanded. And I think that when you strip that from that child's experience, they're just really able to be, you know, yeah, this is just who I am. And what an amazing gift you've, to Kara's point, what you provided. And imagine if you weren't his mother, right? And
I mean, also, I just, like, the biggest thing for me, like, I firmly believe that, like, parenting should not just be a selfless act, but a selfish act. Like, I feel like we all need to get something out of this as well. And I think that that's the reason we get tricked into having more kids, because we do. I do think, like, as much as Eli has definitely gotten a lot out of me being his mother, for sure, because he is not easy. But, like, I have gotten so much more out of him being my child. I mean, you know, you talk about, like, as much as I've been conditioned to be very, like, take it or leave it with who I am. I mean, living with someone who just doesn't have that choice but be right, who they are. People can take it or leave it. I mean, it really, like, reinforces to you, like, how much you just can't be held hostage by other people's view of, like, whether what you're doing is right or not. Mm-hmm. And, I always feel sort of like sheepish whenever people, like, compliment me on being a great mom because I'm allowing my child to be who he or she is. Mm-hmm. And it makes me sad that that's the same way I get annoyed when men get rewarded for, like, taking a half day off work to be with their child. It's like, this fatherhood bonus thing. I feel like I have some equivalent of that, which is, like, the cisgendered heterosexual woman bonus, where it's like, somehow I get some bonus for allowing Eli to be who he is. When it's like, that's really a damning indictment of parents, that's something to be rewarded. You know, I mean, thank you for saying it. I'm not saying, like, how.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Me.
Right.
You know, it's like shocking that makes me a good mom. It's kind of like how doing the bare minimum makes a dad a good dad.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I, just to clarify, I have to say that to, first of all, anybody who comes for coaching usually is trying to, they might not realize it at the beginning, but certainly as we progress, they realize that they're trying to see their kid for who they are, and they have ascribed their own story to their child, and it's not applicable. And so I think that all parents should be applauded for seeing their kids for who they are, because it isn't the norm. We try to do it through our own lens, and because that's what was done to us. And so we're stopping that and raising our kids in a different way. And I think that that's a real key into being a good parent, regardless of the reason. It might be that you want your kid to be a baseball player and they don't have interest in baseball. I mean, and that sounds ridiculous, but I can't tell you how many people come to me and tell me that they want their kid to be a baseball player, and their kid wants to be. And after we have 8 sessions, they realize their kid hates baseball. So,
yikes. Well, I will say, as much as my house was not a great one for my brother to grow up in, I actually felt very seen in my house. And I felt like I was totally raised to be whoever I wanted to be. And, like, you know, again, like, growing up in an evangelical house in the South, like, that was not an obvious thing. I mean, I was not very close to my dad, but I had a phenomenal mother. And I think 99% of why I feel I can be as honest as I can and be who I am, and I have that conviction, is because I did feel that from my mom. And I think it sucks that, like, my brother didn't.
Right.
And so it's, I mean, that's the other weird thing about parenting, isn't it? We can all have the same parent, and siblings can have wildly different experiences. And like, that's one thing I think about with my kids too. It's like, I had a real moment of clarity several years ago when they were younger, that it's like, somehow I celebrate Eli for wanting to be a princess, but I have a problem when Evie wants to represent as a princess. Let's decode that, you know? Right. I mean, I mean, but this is what's fun about parenthood to me. Yeah. I mean, it just it throws all of this shit open, and it's like, you got to figure out who you are and what you believe, and it's going to be like held up to you in a way that like nothing ever happened.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Well, how can we get people to find you or to join, your group, because I think that you offer such an immense amount of support that people would really feel that sense of community that you've established here.
One thing we decided to do last week, I mean, look, we're suddenly after 3 years of sort of building this company, Chairman Mom was sort of having this explosive growth year. And, you know, we did what any self-interested capitalist would do. We decided we're going to stop charging for it for the duration of So it's normally $5 a month, which I said is incredibly important because it aligns our interests with our users. But, you know, every single person in the world now needs a supportive, non-judging digital community. So if people go to chairmanmom.com and put in the code together, you won't get charged for the duration of the crisis. And you don't have to put in a credit card. It's not like, put in a credit card, but we won't charge you. Like, you don't have to put anything in. You'll bypass everything. And, it's for men, it's for women, it's for people who are isolated and feel alone. Wow. And need a non-judgmental space that they can go to. And, you know, I think the thing that's remarkable about Chairman Mom is that our developer team is all women. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons that the software is just written in a fundamentally different way that encourages love and support. Because these are all people who are used to being women in the world and women on the internet being treated like shit. So everyone should go and check out Chairman Mom. I mean, it's a, you know, limited time offer during a pandemic that you can check it out free for as long as this lasts. So you guys know, there's absolutely no
and let's hope, and let's hope it doesn't last that long, right? I hope.
We're honored to support Chairman Mom with this episode of Mindfulness at Work. Learn about Chairman Mom and don't forget to sign up for your free 3-month membership using the code TOGETHER. Visit chairmanmom.com and get started.
Thank you for listening to Mindfulness at Work. If you felt inspired by our conversation, we hope you'll share our podcast with your friends and colleagues.